The subject for today's talk is the instructions for the first jhana. Now, it's actually really too early to give the instructions for the first jhana. If you've done it before, you don't need the instructions anyway. And if you haven't done it before, then probably you're looking at the first 3, 4, 5 days of the retreat. Just being taken up with the mind and body gradually settling down and getting to a place where access to the jhanas is a realistic prospect. So, giving the instructions on the first day, basically, we want to get the instructions out there so that we aren't sort of concealing them as a deep secret. And if you can get into jhana today, then don't let me stop you. But it's not an expectation that you will all be in jhana by 6 p.m. tonight, otherwise, we're going to kick you off the retreat or anything like that. We'll give the instructions now, you'll have them available. If at some point in subsequent days you need them, then please feel free to ask for one of us to repeat the instructions in one of the Q&As in the talks, in your interviews, or use the teacher contact form that's on the notice board. We'll be very happy to repeat those instructions as often as is necessary. So, having just said that it's too early to give the instructions for the first jhana, I'll now give the instructions for the first jhana. So this is what the suttas have to say about the first jhana. Quite secluded from sense pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, one enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by vitakka and vichara, and filled with the piti and sukha born of seclusion. So, like all good definitions, there's a lot of information packed into a small number of words. So, what we'll do now is just unpack that and look at all the various pieces and see how they fit together. So, it starts out quite secluded from sense pleasures. And that's what a retreat is, right? We're not going to the cinema, we're not doing the things we normally do to entertain ourselves. You hopefully don't have the latest Marvel movie running on your screen alongside me. We are deliberately putting ourselves in a situation where we don't have access to the usual things that we do to entertain ourselves. That means that we are secluded from sense pleasures. And the reason for that is that we're looking for a different source of pleasure than something that's based on our external circumstances. We're looking for something that's within ourselves. We're not trying to, get the next iPhone because that's what's going to make us truly happy. We're looking for something inward rather than outward. So we seclude ourselves from sense pleasures. Next, we have secluded from unwholesome states. And in particular, this is talking about the hindrances, but more generally, it's talking about unwholesome states in general. We'll talk more about the hindrances as the retreat goes on. I think Lee has a talk possibly tomorrow night about the hindrances, and I'll be mentioning them in a morning talk later on. But in a fairly straightforward way, actually, we can see how various unwholesome states can interfere with jhana. The most important thing to know about the jhanas is that they are states of enhanced well-being. We're going to look at some ways to start each meditation sit off by creating a positive mind state. So that will be pointing us in the right direction to begin with. But it's really key that we bear in mind that the jhanas are basically various versions of feeling good in one way or another. No pain, no gain is not a mantra that will serve you on this retreat. Trying to grit your teeth and force your way through agony and misery into the jhana just isn't going to work. The aversion will get in the way. Another mantra that's not so helpful, greed is good, right? You remember that one? Again, excessive wanting is going to get in the way as well. This can be a real problem because we come on retreats like this because we want to learn the jhanas, right? So you want to get the jhana. But wanting the jhana is likely to make the jhana not show up. So, yeah, we need to find a way to work through that, to let go of the grasping, the wanting, to approach this as, look, if we do the practices to the best of our ability, then hopefully with a prevailing wind, the jhana will show up. If we're trying too hard to make it happen, then unfortunately, we're just tripping ourselves up. Lee also mentioned last night another very, very helpful attitude for this kind of practice, which is what he calls relaxed diligence. So there's a real balance here between effort on the one hand, relaxation on the other. You know the guitar string metaphor, right? If the guitar string's too loose, then it makes that kind of bruh sound that doesn't sound very good. And if it's too tight, then the string snaps and you don't have a guitar string anymore. You want it to be somewhere in the middle. How much effort is enough? Oh, yeah, you're going to have to figure that one out for yourself. If there's too much energy, too much striving, too much agitation in the system, that's going to lead to restlessness, busy mind, things shifting around too much. That's going to get in the way of the stability that's needed to enter the jhana. But if there's too little energy in the system, then we get into this kind of drifting, drowsing, kind of down place of drowsiness and dullness, where things are just kind of switching off because we're basically falling asleep rather than settling. We're looking for a balance between enough energy, alertness, awakeness on the one hand, enough relaxation, softness, and openness on the other. So, relaxed diligence. We want to be as relaxed as we can without falling off the cushion, but we want to be diligent. We want to stay at it, keep doing the practice. We don't want to just try it for 10 minutes and then think, well, it's not working. Maybe I'll go for a walk. We need to stay at it. And that leads me on to the last point, which is really that persistence is key with these practices. I made myself laugh last night, actually. I was inflating an airbed for myself to sleep on because I'm in the spare room. I'm sharing the house with my partner, who's a retreatant on this retreat. So kind of divided the house up between us. And I spent a few minutes pumping the thing to inflate the airbed, and then I couldn't see the airbed inflating, so I poked it a bit, like, is there any air going in? And then I spent another minute or so inflating it, and then I started poking the airbed. The whole process just took forever, and if I'd just stayed pumping it until the bed had inflated, it wouldn't have taken half so long. This kind of doubt, is this working? Is there a hole in the airbed? Is the pump even connected properly? Yeah, that again is going to get in the way. If you find yourself trying an aid for 5 minutes and, well, access concentration isn't happening, so let's try a different aid, or let's, you know, maybe go for a walk. Yeah, that stuff is very much going to get in the way. All of the practices that we're going to share do work. And I can say that hand on heart because I've tried all of them in preparation for these retreats. Even the ones I really don't like, I still stayed with them long enough to convince myself that, yeah, this one works as well. Never want to do it again in the rest of my life, but it does work. So honestly, I can say these techniques really do work. You just have to stick with them. So those are some of the common kind of unwholesome states that can come up. The just general aversion in practice, greed, wanting the jhana to come up, too much energy, restlessness, not enough energy, dullness, doubt, hopping from method to method, not really giving anything time to take root. But we also have another tool in the toolbox to help with secluding ourselves from unwholesome states. And that's what Lee mentioned last night in terms of access concentration. This is not a term actually that you find in the suttas. I think Lee mentioned this. It comes from the Visuddhimagga, which is one of the later commentaries. But it's quite a helpful idea. It's this idea that the mind is concentrated enough that you're able to stay with the object, thoughts are wisping in the background, and they're not really pulling you off anymore. And that means that if a thought does come along, like maybe if I just tried a bit harder, this would work a bit better, it's not going to pull you off your whatever method you're using. Or if a thought comes along, like, I don't think this is working, yeah, that'll come up and it'll just kind of come up and then drift away again in the background. It's not going to mess with your practice. So developing access concentration is really actually a very skillful way of secluding oneself from unwholesome states. It provides, if you like, a measure of resilience that will keep us grounded, keep the practice going, rather than making us quite so much at the mercy of whatever random thought happens to wander into our head to see if we agree with it. So just to recap, how do we get into access? Lee talked about this last night, and of course, go back and listen to that talk again when it's posted if you want to hear the full gory details of all of the various methods and aids and things. But like I say, all of the methods work. the breath with any of the five aids. We've got, let me see if I can remember them off the top of my head. We've got the counting. We've got using the two syllable word or the two words like Budo or peace, love, something like that. We've got the ocean wave visualization. We've got the parts of the breath, beginning, middle, end, gap. We've got noticing the lengths of the breath. Is it long? Is it short? And that kind of thing. So we've got the breath and various things you can bolt onto the breath to make the breath a bit more interesting initially. We've also got metta as another approach. Metta works super well. If you like doing metta practice, then strongly recommend giving that a go as a way to get to access concentration. And in, I think, a couple of mornings' time, certainly in maybe it's 3 mornings' time, we'll be doing a guided body scan. So if you aren't familiar with the body scan, then you'll have that one available as well. So find one that you like or find the one that you dislike least, depending on how that goes. And then just stay with it. Just follow the method and see where it takes you. And like I say, it can take 3, 4, 5 days for the mind to settle down. My first Jhana retreat, I was almost in despair when I went to one of my interviews with Lee because, yeah, the retreat's half over and nothing's happened yet. And he said, yeah, it can take time to settle down. Yeah, the second half of the retreat was a lot more, well, it felt a lot more productive than the first half. The first half was just as productive. I just didn't have as much to show for it because it was things settling down. All right. A couple more details about access. So, what's it like to be in access concentration? Well, like we've already said, you're able to stay with your object consistently. Any thoughts that come along are wispy in the background and they're not really pulling you off. You may find that your breathing gets shallower in access concentration. Don't try to game the system and breathe shallowly in case it gets you to access concentration. That doesn't work. The reason I think that you're breathing more shallowly is as the mind and body settle, they're not working as hard. They don't need to be taking in as much air, and so everything settles and the breath becomes finer. If you're still fizzed up and agitated and busy and you're breathing more shallowly, then you're just not breathing enough, and that's not a good thing. So let the breath do what the breath does. Don't try to force it or trick it into getting you more concentrated. Lee also mentioned the possible appearance of a brightness in the visual field, a diffuse white light, maybe. The important thing to say on this one is that that happens for some people very consistently. For other people, they just don't get it at all. And some of us get it occasionally, but not very often. And I used to regard myself in the I just don't get it at all category. And I get it occasionally, so I'm kind of sliding myself over into the well sometimes, but not very often category. If you get it, then yeah, it's a sign that you're getting calm and settled. Fine. You don't need to do anything with the light. It's just an indication that your particular configuration of mind and body is getting settled. If you don't get the brightness, don't worry about it. Like I say, not everyone does. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that, you know, you're a person who doesn't like broccoli rather than a person who does like broccoli. It's not a big deal. Sometimes people think, oh, I wish I did get the bright light. It sounds really cool to get a bright light when I'm meditating. But yeah, it can have its drawbacks as well, right? Because the bright light comes and then you get really excited that, oh, I'm getting a bright light, and now you've just agitated yourself and messed with your concentration. So there's pros and cons to both. So let's say you've reached a point in your practice in the retreat where you can reach access concentration. You're with your object consistently, you're not getting pulled off. What you're going to do now to enter the first jhana is stay in access concentration for 5 to 10 to 15 minutes. That's a deliberately vague period of time. But you're going to stay with it for 5 to 10 to 15 minutes. If you're impatient like me, then stay a bit longer than you think you need to. And then when you've been there for a good while, shift your attention from whatever aid you're using to a pleasant sensation somewhere in the body. And you might think, well, where the heck am I going to find a pleasant sensation in my body? You'll probably find one fairly easily, actually. As things get calmer and more settled, very often the body starts to feel pleasant somewhere or other. It's very common to feel some pleasantness in the hands. If you like to smile when you meditate, then quite often the face will feel pretty nice, actually. I personally don't like to smile when I meditate. I prefer to stay kind of grimly focused. But again, just as an experiment, I did practice smiling when getting into access concentration. And yeah, it worked well, actually. The smile felt pretty good by the time I was stable. If metta is your access method, you may feel pleasant in the heart. But pretty much, if you name a body part, then someone somewhere has found a way to use that to get into the first jhana. So find something in your bodily experience which is a pleasant sensation. You drop whatever you were using to get to access concentration. So if you were using the breath, let go of the breath. If you were using metta, let go of the metta. Shift your attention on to the pleasant sensation. Now comes the tricky part, because what you're going to do with the pleasant sensation is enjoy the pleasantness of the pleasant sensation and do nothing else apart from that. Just stay with the pleasant sensation and continue to enjoy it. So you're not trying to make the pleasant sensation do anything in particular. You're not trying to—I don't know what you could try to do with it. You're not trying to do anything with it. You're enjoying the pleasantness of the pleasant sensation. Now, what will happen as a result of this is that, so you have a pleasant sensation, right? And that's pleasant. And you allow yourself to enjoy it. And yeah, enjoying things is pleasant as well. So now you have a bit more pleasantness in your experience than you did before. And you continue to enjoy it, and you're enjoying your slightly expanded pleasantness. And well, that's pleasant, so it's getting a little bit bigger. And so you get this kind of positive feedback loop being set up where the pleasantness starts to build and build and build. And at some point, you don't have to interfere with this process, you don't have to help it at all. At some point, the pleasantness will expand to the point that it will take you into the first jhana. So one enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by vitakka and vichara, and filled with the piti and sukha born of seclusion. So we got four technical words there, which are deliberately untranslated. These are the four jhana factors of the first jhana. The first is piti, and this is a sensation of physical pleasure. You sometimes see it translated as something like rapture, euphoria, ecstasy, delight. Lee quite likes the translation glee. For me, I associate it more with a kind of energy sensation. I've done a certain amount of qigong, energy work, that kind of thing. And to me, it feels very much akin to the sensations that I get going on when I'm doing energy practices. So for me, I associate PT with energy. For some people, it shows up very strongly as heat. For other people, it has more of a sexual quality to it. But basically, we're dealing with a pronounced physical sensation. Usually, hopefully pleasant. So that's the piti. The sukha is an emotional quality. It's emotional joy or happiness. And sukha is the opposite of dukkha, right? Dukkha, sadness, gloominess, suffering. Dukkha, happiness, joy, hooray. So we have the physical pleasure of the piti, and we have the emotional happiness or joy of the sukha. In the first jhana, generally speaking, the piti is predominant, and particularly if you get strong piti, that might really be the only thing you notice going on. But when you get used to it, you'll notice that, yeah, there's some sukha going on there as well. We also have these two other factors, vitakka and vichara. Now, there is a whole can of worms about how to translate vitakka and vichara, which I am proposing to sidestep for now. It will no doubt come up at some point during the retreat. But vitakka and vichara literally mean something like thinking and examining. It indicates mental activity. The first jhana is not a tranquil state. You've got this strong sense of energy running through the body. For some people, it can feel like you're kind of hooked up to an electrical current. This is not a peaceful place to be. There's a lot of stuff going on, and there may be mental activity, there may be thoughts coming and going. That's fine, don't worry about it. Your first jhana will not necessarily be a thought-free state by any means. Your thoughts are more likely to be along the lines of, wow, this is probably the first jhana, isn't it? Gosh, that's really quite strong. Well, I can see what he meant when he said, oh yeah, crack. As opposed to, drafting the letter that you're going to send to your bank manager after the retreat's over. It's probably that kind of mental activity. But yeah, there may well be mental activity present in the first jhana. But like I say, probably the PT will be the predominant thing just because it's pretty striking for most people. So that is the first jhana. So just to run through that again, you're going to pick one of the access methods, stay with it until you find yourself in this indestructible place, hang out there 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, find a pleasant sensation somewhere in the body. Let go of your access method, shift your attention to the pleasant sensation in the body, enjoy the pleasantness, and stay with it until the first jhana finds you. Sounds simple, right? So there can be a few things that can give us some challenges along the way. A fairly common one is you get to access, you shift the pleasant sensation, and it's nice, and it's nice, and it's nice, and then it's gone. And the pleasant sensation just kind of fizzles out, and it's not there anymore. Yeah, that can happen. If that's happening to you, it can help to stay a bit longer in access concentration. The longer you stay in access concentration, the more stable and settled things get, basically. And so if you're finding that the pleasant sensation is fizzling out too soon, then having a bit more stability from staying a bit longer in access may be helpful. So yeah, just keep trying until you get it, basically. Another very common problem, you shift over to the pleasant sensation. You remember me saying that thing about that feedback loop. You want to help the feedback loop. Yeah, that's not going to work. That's almost certainly going to break it. Don't try to help it. Let it take care of itself. You shift the pleasant sensation. You start to feel the pleasant sensation building. You can start to feel something happening. You get very excited because this is the first jump. Yeah. You knock yourself out of concentration and it all falls to bits. You'll get used to it, is all I can say. Like anything else, the novelty will wear off, right? You remember how exciting that iPhone was when you first unboxed it, and then a week later you had your nice iPhone, and then a month later you had your iPhone, and then a year later you had your phone that wasn't really working that well anymore. Yeah. It's not like the jhanas are going to wear out like your iPhone does, but certainly the excitement of, hey, something cool's happening, will fairly soon be replaced by, oh, okay, here we go. And that's it. So, yeah, don't worry about it. Just keep doing it, and the novelty will wear off, and you will eventually stop getting too excited and spoiling it all. The flip side of that can happen for some people is actually, as it starts to happen, it can be a bit scary. And this is entirely understandable, right? Your mind and body are doing something that you're not used to them doing. Something is happening, and I've told you not to try to help it happen, so it's almost like something's happening that's maybe a little bit beyond your control. So yeah, that can be unsettling, unnerving, maybe. And what we suggest with that is, first of all, just remember, you are in control of your practice, right? You can stop at any time. If something's happening, you don't like it, you can open your eyes, stand up, go for a walk, take a shower, have a cup of tea, whatever you want to do. You don't have to go somewhere that you're terrified of going to. But what you can do, first of all, you can take my word for it, the jhanas are honestly not a scary place to be. They're a really nice place to be. When you get used to going there, you will learn, yeah, this is a cool place to hang out. But when you're first learning to get there, what you can do is just go as far as you're willing to, just kind of tiptoe up to the edge of it and say, yeah, okay, that's enough, back away. And then the next session, just tiptoe up and see if you can stay there maybe just a little bit longer or go just a little bit closer to it. And each time you do that, just consciously notice, yeah, that was okay actually. Maybe my heart rate's going a little bit, but nothing bad happened actually. That it seems to be okay so far. And eventually you'll get to a point where you can go all the way in, and actually it's fine. You can overcome the fear by kind of just gradually exposing yourself to it a little bit more each time. One final one that you might come across is you get into the first jhana, and the PT is just incredibly intense. If you get the version of it that feels like a kind of electrical energy sensation, it might feel like you're being electrocuted or something. Some people do find, especially the first few times, that it's just super intense. If that happens, then what I suggest is you take a deep breath. As you let the breath out, let some of the energy out with it, and shift your attention from the physical sensation of the PT to the emotional quality of happiness. So you're redirecting your attention away from what's going on in the more bodily component of the PT to the emotional quality of the sukha. So you take a breath, you let it out, and you shift your attention to emotional happiness. That will take you into the second jhana. Now, Lee's going to talk about second and subsequent jhanas in a later talk, but the second jhana is a much more peaceful, much more tranquil place than the first. And so if you are getting just incredibly super intense PT in the first, then take a breath, let it out, focus on happiness. See if that takes you into the second jhana, and you should find that a much easier place to hang out in for long periods if you're getting the really intense first jhana. So just a few more key points to mention. The first is don't jump too soon. Lee said, if you've been with the last five breaths in a row, that's probably not quite access concentration yet. If you've been in access concentration for a good 17 seconds, see if you can stay there a little while longer. It's really helpful to have stable concentration to be able to do this stuff. The flip side to that is if you are the sort of person who will put things off forever because you're not sure you're quite good enough yet, then give it a go every now and again. Just jump and see what happens. What's the harm, right? So if you know what your natural tendency is, if you know you're a bit impatient like me, then stay longer than you think you need to. If you know you're a bit too cautious, then just give it a go and see what happens. You'll find for yourself how long it's going to take you to get enough concentration to get to the jhanas. So explore, play around, experiment. Second thing, I know I've been harping on this point, but just to repeat it, it's really much more helpful to look at this as creating the conditions for jhana to arise rather than you with your super powered brain meditating your way into the first jhana. The more you sort of evoke your sense of personal agency in the process, the more likely you are to get into that kind of grasping greed space that will interfere with it. It's more like, you want to have some flowers in your garden. So you plant some seeds. You don't then go back out half an hour later and kind of yank them out of the ground to try to pull them up into flowers, right? They haven't had time for the process to work yet. You plant the seeds, you look after them, you water them, I don't know gardening, I don't know what else you do, but you do stuff, you take care of it, and sooner or later flowers appear. It's the same kind of thing. I really need to find a metaphor that isn't gardening, but that's the best one I've got for now. Something else to say is that if you find yourself getting frustrated, you've been doing this for a while, your mind's still really busy, or you keep falling asleep, or it's just not working, it may be a good idea to go for a walk, or have a shower, or just sit in the garden with a cup of tea, or just do something that isn't meditating with a furrowed brow, right? You will not get to the first jhana by etching frown lines into your face. That's just not how it's going to work. It's quite a natural thing to get frustrated, but the more you get frustrated, the mind will tend to tighten up. The more it tightens up, it will tend to want to go to familiar places and patterns. We're trying to get somewhere unfamiliar, somewhere new. We're trying to go into jhanas. Assuming that you're not routinely doing jhanas already, we're trying to learn to do something new. So we need to be relaxed and open to do that rather than kind of clenching and huddled into our kind of psychological comfort zone. So if you do find yourself getting very wound up, then take a break, relax. We're talking last night about trying to make sure you're doing 6 to 8 hours of practice a day. And if you are doing 6 to 8 hours of relaxed, diligent practice in a day, then yeah, that's good. That's really helpful. If you are spending 8 hours gradually setting yourself on fire with fury, that is probably not going to help. Take a break, go for a walk. The last thing to say is that we've got plenty of time, right? This is the first full day of a reasonably long retreat, right? We've got 11 days altogether. We've got plenty of time. There's no need to rush, there's no need to push. You can trust that these practices will work. So, yeah. You take care of the practice, and the practice will take care of the results for you.